This is Audible.
Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of Forged by Fire by Sharon M. Draper, narrated by Thomas Penny.
1. If you don't sit your stinking useless butt back down in that shopping cart, I swear I'll bust your greasy face in, she screamed at the 3-year-old in front of her. He studied her face, decided she was serious, and put his leg back inside the cart. He was standing near the front end of the cart, amidst an assorted pile of cigarette boxes, egg cartons, and pop bottles. He didn't want to sit down anyway because of the soft, uncomfortable load in his pants, which had been there all afternoon, and which felt cold and squishy when he moved too much. He rarely had accidents like that, but when he did, Mama sometimes made him keep it in his pants all day to teach him a lesson. Gerald was only 3, but he had already learned many such lessons. He'd never seen Sesame Street, never heard of Riverfront Stadium. He didn't even know he lived in Cincinnati. But he knew the important things, like never mess with Mama when she was in bed. Mama got really mad when you woke her up, especially if she had somebody in bed with her. And never touch the hot thing that Mama used to light her cigarettes, even if the mysterious orange and blue fire that comes out of it liked to tease you and dance for only a moment before running away. Mama had once caught Gerald playing with a lighter, and she made the fire come out, and she held his hand right over the flame. It wasn't his friendly fire dancer, though, but a cruel red soldier that made his hand scream and made him dizzy with pain, and he could smell something like the meat Mama cooked. But it was his hand. When she stopped, she had washed his hand with cool water and soothed him with warm hugs and wrapped with salve and bandages the place where the fire soldier had stabbed him. She told him that she had done it for his own good and to teach him a lesson. He had tried to tell her that he was just trying to find the fire dancer, but she wasn't listening, and he had given up, thankful for the hugs and the silence. One other lesson that Gerald had learned was never, never stay near Mama when she sniffed the white stuff. She got it from a man named Leroy, who smelled too sweet and smiled too much. When he leaves, you hide behind the couch and hope Aunt Queen comes over, because sometimes Mama yells and gets her belt or her shoe and hits and hits and hits. And sometimes she just goes to sleep on the floor. And it gets dark, and you cry, and your tummy feels tight and hurty. But at least there's no shoe to run away from. Once, Aunt Queen had found Gerald curled up behind the couch, sucking his thumb. His pajamas were soaked and smelly, and he was shivering and hungry. Mama had been gone all day. She had told him not to leave the room, and he had really, really tried to be good, but he was so cold, so very cold. Aunt Queen had taken him to her apartment and given him a warm bath, a bowl of hot soup, and some warm, fuzzy sleepers, even though she had to pin the back of them so they wouldn't fall off. Then Mama had come, and she and Aunt Queen had yelled and screamed so much that Gerald had to hold his ears while he lay curled at the foot of the bed. Finally, Mama started crying, and Aunt Queen was saying stuff like, "I know, honey." And Gerald knew he was going back home. That night, Mama had hugged him and kissed him and held him close until he fell asleep. Gerald had felt so warm and special and golden. He wanted to feel like that forever. He knew his mama loved him. She had bought him a G.I. Joe man last week, and it wasn't even his birthday or Christmas or anything. And most days, she combed his hair and dressed him in clean clothes and told him to say, "Yes, ma'am," to grown folks. And sometimes, on really good days, she would hug him and say, "You know you're my best baby boy, don't you, Gerald? You know you're my baby, don't you?" And he would smile, and that warm golden feeling would start at his toes and fill him all the way up to his smile. Even though Mama had yelled at him, today was a good day. Mama always yelled. It was no big deal. Some days he yelled back at her. Then she would slap him, and he'd cry and he'd cuss at her, and then she would slap him until his head hurt. So mostly he ignored her. But today was a good day, a shiny day, he thought. The sun was bright gold outside against a clear blue sky. And inside the grocery store, there were so many colors and sounds and lights that Gerald just grinned. It was always crowded when they went. Other children would be in carts also, and they would have to pass very close to each other. Gerald liked to pretend he was driving a big, fine silver car down the expressway. Sometimes the cart would be a tank as he passed cautiously through rows of armed cling peaches and silent sentinels that looked like boxes of frosted flakes. And at the checkout lane, the armies rolled smoothly down the long black road that disappeared under the counter. He started to ask Mama where it went, but it was more fun to imagine that it went to a secret hideout where only sweet potatoes and boxes of oatmeal were allowed. When they got home from the grocery store, Gerald sat on the floor and watched Mama stack the boxes and cans on the shelf. She was whistling. He had never heard her whistle before, and he loved the way she laughed as he tried to imitate her. She changed his clothes and didn't even yell at him for not being a big boy, and gave him 2 cookies and an apple. Then she went into the other room. When she came out, she had changed her clothes, and Gerald thought he had never seen anything so lovely. She had on her sparkly, fancy dress that Gerald liked to touch. "Mama will be right back, baby," she told him. "I just have to go see Mr. Leroy for a minute. You stay right here and wait for me, you hear?" Gerald started to cry, but he didn't want Mama to lose her good mood, so he just nodded and bit his lip. The door closed, and he could hear her high heels clicking on the steps. Then it was very, very quiet. After he finished both his cookies and the apple had turned brown on the white parts, Gerald looked for something to do. It was getting dark, and he wanted G.I. Joe to sit with him because the shadows on the wall were getting long and scary. He found G.I. Joe on the floor next to Mama's bed, right next to the cigarette lighter that she had been looking for this morning. Gerald picked it up, and for a time he used it as a gun for Joe. Then it was a log for Joe to jump over. Then it was an enemy for Joe to attack. Finally, Gerald started idly flicking the little red handle. At first, it just made a scratchy sound, and the smell made him cough and remember how he'd got that brown place in the palm of his hand. Then he remembered the tiny fire dancer, and he wondered if it still lived in there with the fire sword soldier. After numerous flicks, he got the fire to stay on. He grinned with delight. The dancer was there, smiling at him and bowing for him, changing from splendid orange to icy green to iridescent purple. The lighter flame flickered magically, making golden the purple shadows on the wall. With sudden inspiration, Gerald shouted, "Hey, Joe, we got a torch!" as he and G.I. Joe marched around the kitchen table. Gerald crawled under the table then, flicking the lighter over and over again to light the way for G.I. Joe. They fought shadows and monsters. They blew up cities and kingdoms. Gerald made the sound effects, and G.I. Joe dutifully followed his general into combat. As the mighty battle came to its climax, Gerald crawled up on a chair and stood on the kitchen table, waving his arms triumphantly. "Mama would kill me," he thought momentarily, "if she saw me up here." But the thought passed as G.I. Joe fought the terrible mountain man by the light of only a single torch. Suddenly, the tiny light of G.I. Joe's torch was huge and bright as the tip of one curtain in the window touched the flame. Gerald heard a loud whoosh, and then he turned in terror to see the whole window covered with harsh red flames that crawled and licked and jumped along the windowsill. Gerald scrambled down from the table and ran to his hiding place behind the couch. "Mama said stay here and wait for her," he told himself. "I know she'll be here in a minute." He peeked around the corner of the sofa and watched flames consume the boxes of cereal and macaroni that Mama had just bought. When the fire reached the bottle of Big K soda, Gerald watched, fascinated, as the soda bubbled, then fizzed. When it finally burst in a loud, sizzling explosion, Gerald jumped back behind the sofa, coughing and wheezing from the heat and smoke. He curled up in his usual position then, thumb in his mouth, crying softly. He thought about his mama and how pretty she was. He wondered if G.I. Joe would ever find his way back. And he wondered how he could see so many colors with his eyes closed. 2. When Gerald woke up, he didn't know where he was. He was too scared to cry. Everything around him was white. The walls, which seemed to tilt toward him. The sheets, which were scratchy and so bright that he had to close his eyes. And the people, whose pale white faces and uniforms made him think of ghosts that come to get you in the night. His throat felt scratchy, and it hurt a little to breathe. And it smelled funny, too, kind of like medicine mixed with the stuff that Mama used to clean the floor. Mama. He remembered then. He wondered if she was mad at him. Maybe he was here to be punished. Terrified, he began to cry. "Hey, little man is coming around. How you feeling, sport?" Gerald didn't know what to say, or even if he should say anything to this strange white man with the orange-colored hair. So he just stared at him, trying to hold back the tears, needing to go to the bathroom, and wanting to go home. A pretty black lady walked into the room then, and at first Gerald thought it was Mama. But Mama never, never wore white. And this lady was smiling, and Gerald knew that when Mama came to get him, she'd be screaming and yelling and cussing. Mr. Orange Hair walked over to her and said in a voice that was supposed to be too low for Gerald to hear, "Did you get in touch with social services yet?" "Yes, they're on their way. But that may take all night. You know how it goes." "Has the mother been found yet?" "Yeah, she showed up right as they were putting the kid in the ambulance, screaming hysterically about her precious baby. If that teenager from next door hadn't rushed into the apartment when he did, there would have been nothing left of her precious baby but a charred ember." "You've got that right. Did you get the whole story?" "From what we can tell, he had been there by himself for several hours, probably playing with matches. A neighbor said the mama was a big-time druggie, left him there alone all the time. She said she usually checked on the boy, but he had been so quiet today nobody knew he was there. The kid who rescued him told the police that a funny feeling just made him check the apartment before he got out himself. He said he knew the little guy liked to play behind the couch. He ought to get a medal, and that mother ought to get... Shh. She's already in custody. Child endangerment, abandonment, that sort of thing. Plus, it looks as if he's been abused physically as well. He's got lots of old bruises and scars, and a burn spot on the palm of his hand that doesn't look accidental. Makes me want to scream." "Yeah, tell me. You never get used to the bruised or burned or bleeding babies, the kids who've been abused, or the parents who bring them in. How old is he?"
3.
"Does he have any other relatives?"
"Yes, an aunt, I think. She's on her way."
"Good. Well, I think he's stable now, but I bet he's mighty frightened. See if you can find a big hug for him." Gerald listened as the pretty lady walked toward the bed. He kept his eyes closed because he was scared and because he didn't want her to know he had been listening. She didn't know he was an expert in listening to the conversations of grown-ups. He used to sit so quiet he was almost invisible and listen to Mama and her friends talk about stuff he wasn't supposed to hear.
"I see Gerald. He's hiding behind his eyes."
How did she know? Her voice was soft and playful. She took his small hand in hers.
"Come on," she said gently. "Let me see those pretty brown eyes."
Her voice seemed to be smiling, so Gerald slowly opened his eyes. He thought she looked like an angel, with her round brown face and soft white uniform. He wondered if she could fly. He smiled back at her.
"That's better. How do you feel? Would you like some water?" Gerald nodded. She took a spoon and picked out an ice chip and placed it on his tongue. He didn't realize the intensity of the fire in his throat until that soothing ice chip began to cool the flames.
"More," he whispered.
"Sure, baby cakes, but let's take it easy." She gently spooned another chip onto his tongue.
"I want my mama,"
Gerald said, the tears filling his eyes again. "Your mama's real busy right now, but she'll be here as soon as she can. She loves you very much, you know. But I'm going to stay right here with you till your mama or your auntie gets here, okay? You've been alone long enough. Here's another little chip of ice. Let's see if we can cool that fire." Gerald relaxed finally, letting himself enjoy the coolness of the sheets and the warmth of her smile. He let her help him to the bathroom, and as she lifted him back into the bed, she hugged him gently. She tucked the soft blanket around him. He sighed and drifted beyond the memories of the day. He slept. The orange-haired doctor returned, checked the pulse of the sleeping child, and sighed to the nurse. "I wonder what's going to happen to our little friend here. He'll be out in a day or two, but what will become of the rest of his life?" Just as the nurse was about to answer, Aunt Queen stormed into the room. Ms. Queen Marie Antoinette Lincoln literally filled a room when she entered it. She was dressed in bright red from the top of her elaborate turban to the tips of her polished fingernails, and an air of regal self-assurance seemed to travel with her. Her eyes, which commanded immediate respect, sparked with a fire that matched the shine on her highly polished wheelchair. Her throne. Her voice, loud and authoritative, demanded, "Where is my nephew?" Dr. Orangehair, probably better known as Dr. McFall, was used to irate or worried relatives and was not intimidated by Aunt Queen's dramatic entrance. "If you mean little Gerald, he's just fallen asleep. Let's go out into the hall where we can discuss this without disturbing him." Without a word, Aunt Queen rolled out of the ward, past the nursing station, and through the large wooden doors into the hall. How she managed to get her chair through those heavy doors just ahead of him so that the door bumped him on the backswing, he wasn't sure. But he thought he saw her smile with satisfaction when he came into the hall, rubbing his shoulder. "I'm Dr. McFall. Your nephew is very lucky. He's suffering from mild smoke inhalation, but he's not burned or otherwise physically injured. Emotionally, the injuries may be much deeper, but only time will tell. He's going to need lots of love and emotional support in the next few months." "That's why I'm here, Doctor. I've been trying to get that girl to let me take care of the boy ever since he was born. But I gotta give her credit. She tried. She's got a good heart. She really does love him. She just doesn't know much about mothering. She ain't learned how to take care of herself good, let alone take care of a baby. And them drugs ate up what little sense she had. I should have stepped in before now. Probably should have turned her in, but she's family. You understand how it is, don't you?" The boy could have died tonight. "Well, praise the Lord, he didn't. When can I take him home?" "You'll have to talk to social services and start the paperwork to be Gerald's temporary guardian. Are you his only relative? Does he have a father?" "Of course he has a father!" Aunt Queen's feathers were ruffled now. "Don't you have a father? I know you doctors are getting pretty good at making test tube babies, but the last I checked, it still took a mother and a father to make a baby." "What I meant was..." "I know what you meant! Since this kid is poor and black and his mother is living alone and unmarried, his father must be long gone. Well, I'm here to tell you that not all black men are like that. There's zillions of black families with a mama and a daddy and two kids like the average American family." Aunt Queen's shoulders drooped a bit then, and she said with resignation, "But, unfortunately, this ain't one of them. I don't know where the boy's daddy is. I just didn't want you to assume. You could have been wrong, you know." Dr. McFall smiled. "You're quite a lady, Ms. Lincoln. How are you going to take care of a 3-year-old from a wheelchair?" "Call me Queen. All my friends do. And like you said, I'm quite a lady.
I raised 6 kids from this here wheelchair. I ain't forgot how. What's one more grandnephew? I'd like to see him now.
Of course. And unless there are complications, he should be able to go home by Wednesday.
Aunt Queen quietly entered Gerald's room. She listened for a moment to his slightly raspy breathing, then softly touched his cheek. He coughed, turned, and opened his eyes. At first, confused and frightened, he looked around wildly. But when he saw Aunt Queen, he relaxed and smiled.
"Aunt Queen, where's my mama?"
"Your mama hasn't been feeling well, Gerald, and she's going to a place that's going to make her feel all better, just like you came here to get better. She told me to tell you that she loves you very, very much. Why don't you come and stay at my house, Gerald? Just tell your mama comes home, okay?"
"Can we have oatmeal?"
"Every day."
"Can I put syrup on my oatmeal? Mama never lets me."
"We won't tell her."
Aunt Queen smiled with a mischievous grin.
"What about G.I. Joe?"
"Who?"
"My G.I. Joe man. Mama got him for me. I left him.
Suddenly the memories overwhelmed the boy. The flames, the fear, the feeling of utter desolation were too much for him to handle. He cried, huge, body-racking sobs. Queen positioned her chair close to his bed, deftly lifted him up, and cuddled him in her ample lap. She rocked and crooned while he wept for all the pain he had known in his short life, and for all the pain yet to come. Three. Gerald sat on Aunt Queen's back porch, idly rolling rocks down the wooden ramp that had been built for her wheelchair. In the 6 years that he had been living with Aunt Queen, this ramp had become his favorite spot. It had launched toy cars and boats and big wheel riding toys when he was little. Later, there had been skateboards and, last year, a go-kart he had made by himself. Of course, he wasn't supposed to ride a skateboard or go-kart down the ramp, but who could resist the temptation? Sometimes he liked to lie stretched out on the ramp, his face to the sun, dreaming. Today he was smiling, because tomorrow was his 9th birthday, and he was really, really hoping for a bicycle. It didn't have to be new, just red and fast. He was a quiet boy who listened more than he talked and who rarely shared his dreams or fears with anyone, even Aunt Queen, whom he adored. Since the day that she had taken him home when he was released from the hospital, he had lived here with her, under her loving, careful eyes. At first, he had cried for his mother constantly. Aunt Queen had hugged him and hummed old hymns to him and filled in the empty spaces in his heart. Later, he asked for his mother only occasionally, like on his birthday or Christmas. Over time, his demands for her had become weaker, until she had become only a foggy memory. Life at Aunt Queen's was sometimes hectic, but somehow always comforting and reassuring. Because even though he might wake up and find a stranger sleeping on the sofa, or once he remembered in the bathtub, she was real big on showing hospitality to folks in need. He knew that she was always there, and that she would never leave him. Her very presence was like a power source, to be plugged into for love or security, or a good fried chicken dinner. And it wasn't always easy. Gerald remembered times when the lights had been cut off, and the phone, and even the water. He figured getting the water cut off was the worst, because you couldn't flush the toilet. But if it was winter, then doing without the heat and lights was pretty awful. But she managed to get them through it each time, one way or another. One time, he remembered, she had gone downtown to the gas and electric company because they had cut off the heat. He had been about 5, and she had taken him with her. The lady at the desk, who had looked down her nose at them through her funny-looking glasses, had said, "Unless you can come up with $150 by 5 o'clock, there will be no heat."
Aunt Queen had replied quietly. "And unless you come up with some heat by 5 o'clock, you will be on the 6 o'clock news. I'm poor, not stupid. I know that you can't cut off heat to disabled customers in the middle of winter, especially disabled customers with small children. If you look at my payment record, you will see that I pay on time when I have the money. This month, I just don't have it. Something came up. You'll have your money next month. You have my word on it. You can take my word as my promise, or you can let me take my word down the street to Consumer Alert at Channel 5. I'm sure they'd love to hear how you folks are treating the public, especially after that rate hike you just got." The heat was back on by 4 o'clock. The something that had come up was Christmas. Aunt Queen believed passionately in many things, but Christmas was her supreme passion. She thrived on Christmas carols, delighted in decorations, and indulged in special treats and goodies. The tree went up with a great deal of traditional fanfare, like making popcorn to string for garlands and making ornaments of soap and old Christmas cards, during the first week in December, and stayed up until New Year's Day. The house always smelled delicious this time of the year. One day it would be cookies in the oven when Gerald came home from school, and the next day it would be homemade cranberry sauce. Even in years when there wasn't much money, they managed to have a wonderful Christmas, with Aunt Queen always stretching the cookie dough and the turkey dressing just enough to make ends meet. His gifts were never frivolous or the result of Saturday morning cartoon advertising, but thoughtful and delightful. Last year, when he was 8, in addition to 2 books, he loved to read, a new winter coat and a used but still bright and shiny blue sled, he got a flashlight, 2 sets of batteries, and permission to explore the basement and the attic, which had previously been off-limits. No amount of money could have purchased the adventures he had in the next few months, exploring the secrets of the outer limits of the house. In the basement, he had found an old wheelchair covered with dust and cobwebs. Gerald never thought much about Aunt Queen's being in a wheelchair. Rather than being a limitation, her chair seemed to be merely an extension of her personality. She wheeled around the house and neighborhood with very little difficulty, although buildings without ramps and inaccessible public transportation could really start her to fussing. He knew that she had been born with brittle bones, and that she got fractures easily, and that 2 of her 6 children and 2 of her grandchildren also had the condition. She could walk for short distances, but it was sometimes very painful. However, she treated it the same way she treated any other difficulty in her life, first with a sigh, and then a smile. "No use stewing about stuff you can't change," she'd tell Gerald. "It's the things we do have control over that I'm worried about, like whether you're going to finish those carrots or that book report before midnight." He had smiled and finished both. She had given him permission to take the old wheelchair apart, and he had made something that he had called his go-cart. It was lopsided, but it rolled, and when he was in it, he felt like he was king of the world. He had begun it in the basement, but it was cold down there, and there was not much room, so he brought it out to the back porch. Every day after school, he hammered and nailed and pounded on it, making it the ultimate racing machine. He had heard that on TV somewhere. Of course, he had to practice on Aunt Queen's ramp. She had fussed, "You're going to tear up my ramp, boy. How am I going to get down it to go to the market if you got it set up like the Indy 500? "Aw, Aunt Queen, I ain't messed up your ramp. I made it better. I put racing skids on it so it won't be slippery for you when it rains." "Lord help me, racing skids. Do I look like some kind of race car driver? Next thing I know, you'll be telling me you put warp speed on my wheelchair." But the tar paper that Gerald had found and nailed to the ramp really did help her, so she would let him play on it. He had soon grown tired of the tameness of the ramp, which had a gradual slope, and he looked with interest at the driveway of the house next door, which was steep and sloped right down to the street. One afternoon, when Aunt Queen was taking a nap, Gerald quietly took the go-cart to that driveway, got on,
and rolled cautiously down the big hill. He had used his feet to stop himself every few yards, so it didn't go very fast that first trip. The second time, he only used his feet once or twice, and then it was just to slow himself down when he reached the curb leading into the street. By the fourth or fifth trip, he had increased both his confidence and his speed. He even gave himself a little boost with his feet before he tucked them on the piece of wood that was his rudder, so he sped down the hill this time like one of those bobsledders that he'd seen on TV in the Olympics. Just as he got to the curb, he turned the rudder slightly, rolled to the left, and slowed to a halt by bumping into one of the garbage cans sitting there.
"This is awesome," he said to himself. "One more time."
On that last trip, he had given himself a really big boost to get the most speed possible, and he felt like he was flying. When he had almost reached the bottom of the hill, he turned the rudder to slow himself, but instead of slowing his progress, the rudder came off. Still going full speed and almost to the street, Gerald could see a long black Cadillac approaching from the left and a dirty green Ford coming from the right. He rolled off the go-kart and into the garbage cans, knocking them over with a terrible commotion. The go-kart sped into the street, where it was first crushed by the Cadillac, then demolished entirely by the Ford, which blared its horn loudly and screeched to a stop. The driver of the Cadillac never even stopped. He couldn't have known that he had only killed a homemade go-kart and not a child, but he sped on down the street, never looking back. The driver of the Ford got out of her car, checked to see that Gerald was okay. He had bumped his head on a garbage can. Then took him up the steps to the very awake and very angry Aunt Queen.
"Thank you, ma'am," Aunt Queen had said to the woman. "I appreciate your kindness. You saved my boy's life."
Well, actually, a garbage can saved his life, but it could have been tragic. "Don't you people watch your children, letting him play in the street like that? You ought to be ashamed of yourself."
When she saw the blue thunder on Aunt Queen's face, the lady wasn't sure if it was directed toward her or toward the boy, so she backed off a little, saying with a smile,
"I'm afraid his little go-kart is a total loss, however. So are his privileges, probably for the rest of his life."
Aunt Queen had smiled through clenched teeth as the lady returned to her car. Gerald had been terrified because he had never seen Aunt Queen this angry. He was sure he saw blue smoke coming from her ears. She said nothing for at least 5 minutes. He had to go to the bathroom, but he was afraid to move. Finally, she spoke, slowly but explosively.
"You will never, as long as you live on God's green earth, do anything that stupid again."
"Yes, ma'am,"
Gerald whispered.
"You will never, as long as the grass is green and the sky is blue, make me look like a fool in front of strangers."
"I'm sorry, Aunt Queen," he stammered. "I was just trying to... let me explain. I was gonna, but it started going, and..."
"Silence!"
she interrupted.
"And you will never, as long as you walk the sands of time..."
When she got really mad, for some reason she got poetic.
"Endanger your life again. Do you understand me, boy? Never again. You hear?"
"Yes, ma'am. I mean, no, ma'am. I mean, I promise I won't... I mean, I promise I understand."
Gerald had been so scared and so confused that he wasn't sure which of her demands to answer first. Then she had sighed and said,
"Come here, boy."
Gerald had walked slowly to her.
"Give me a hug," she'd said finally. "I love you, boy. Don't do that to me again, you hear?"
Grateful and tearful, Gerald had buried his face in her hug. That had been last summer. The go-kart had never been rebuilt, but the closeness between Gerald and Aunt Queen was probably stronger than ever.
She continued to read to him almost every evening, just as she had been doing from the time he had come to live with her. Stories of adventure and suspense like Sherlock Holmes and Tom Sawyer, as well as poetry. Paul Laurence Dunbar and Langston Hughes and many others. Many nights, the rhythm of the poetry had rocked him to sleep. Gerald was a great help to Aunt Queen around the house, especially in things like reaching and lifting and running errands. And he was even becoming a pretty good cook, learning the basics like hamburgers and scrambled eggs, and even inventing a couple of meals of his own just to please her. "Gerald," Aunt Queen would say, "scramble me some hamburgers." "One scramburglar coming right up," he'd reply with a grin. "It looks a little funny, but it tastes great." Now, with only one day to go until his 9th birthday, Gerald was almost as confident in the kitchen as Aunt Queen, and more important, she trusted him to handle any situation there. He was just about to go into the house to make himself some lunch and to see if she needed anything from the store around the corner, like maybe cake mix or candles, when Aunt Queen met him at the screen door. "Sit down, Gerald," she said quietly. "I've got to talk to you." Gerald tried to remember what he had done wrong. Forgotten to clean out the bathtub? Eaten all the cherry pie? This close to his birthday, he wasn't likely to mess up too badly, he figured. He wasn't sure, but you never can be sure with grown-ups, he thought. "Did I do something wrong, Aunt Queen?" "No, child, it's nothing like that. This is something I've been dreading for 6 years." She paused. "Tomorrow is your birthday, you know." Gerald started to panic. Maybe she wasn't going to be able to get the bike. Maybe she'd been dreading his turning 9, although he couldn't see why. 9 was cool as far as he was concerned. What could it be? "Gerald, you're getting an unexpected present for your birthday tomorrow. Your mother is coming home." 4. Gerald couldn't breathe for a moment. His heart felt tight and crunched inside his chest. All of the hot fears and fiery memories that he had let fade over the last few years were only hidden, not forgotten. He looked up, confused and frightened, and let Aunt Queen soothe him with one of her warm, soft hugs until he was able to speak.
"Mama's coming here?" he asked quietly. "How come?"
"Well, child, is like this." Aunt Queen took a deep breath. "It's time you knew the whole story. When I brought you home with me 6 years ago after the fire, your mama was tried on child abandonment charges and was sent to jail."
"I knew where she was, Aunt Queen. I just didn't like to think about it, so I let her fade away from me."
"I know, Gerald, and I was never sure if I was doing the right thing by keeping you away from her. But she asked me not to bring you there because she wanted you to grow up strong and secure, and she didn't want you to see her in a place like that. I always sent her pictures of you, and she's kept up with how well you're doing in school and what a fine young man you're growing up to be."
"So when does she get out?"
"She's been out almost a year, Gerald." He gasped.
"A year? But where is she? Why hasn't she? I don't understand."
"She got out, found a job and a place to stay, and decided she wanted to get her life together before she came to see you."
"What about me? It's not fair!"
Gerald cried angrily.
"She's had a year to plan for all this, and you two dump it on me on my birthday. Suppose I don't want to see her."
"Then you don't have to," declared Aunt Queen. "But she's been working real hard to make up for the past, and she really wants to share your birthday with you." Gerald just grunted and slumped in a seat by the kitchen table. Aunt Queen sighed again.
"She's got a surprise for you, child."
"I don't think I want no more surprises, Aunt Queen," Gerald answered quietly. "I understand, child. Tell you what. Go out to the garage for me, look under that old green blanket, and bring me what you find. I finally bought me a new sewing machine, and I want to try it out."
"Okay," Gerald muttered glumly.
He didn't feel like carrying any old sewing machine. He didn't feel like helping Aunt Queen. He just wanted to go someplace and think. He walked slowly to the garage, checked for spiders like he always did, and pulled the old green blanket off. Not a sewing machine, and not an old, used, repainted bike, but a shiny, new, red, 10-speed bicycle. He tried not to grin, but he couldn't help it. He knew Aunt Queen had been saving this for his birthday surprise, and he knew that she had put money aside for months to get such a fine bike. And he knew that she had given it to him today to soften the shock of his mother's return. As he rolled it out of the garage, Aunt Queen sat on the back porch, smiling at him. "Happy birthday, Gerald," she said simply. Gerald, whose grin was about to be erased by uncontrollable tears, looked at her and knew she understood. "I love you, Aunt Queen. It's the greatest." "Go on, boy, go try it out. But don't go too far, and stay out of the street, you hear?" She smiled as he took off, waving his hat, T-shirt flapping in the wind. Gerald rode around the block 14 times, came in for a glass of Kool-Aid, and persuaded Aunt Queen to let him explore a little further. She said he could ride 2 blocks away, but by the time it was dark, he had explored 6 blocks in each direction. She knew he needed time to think and sort things out, so she didn't bother him. By the time he came in at dusk, tired and hungry, he was ready to face whatever tomorrow would bring. "What does Mama look like, Aunt Queen?" asked Gerald as he was getting ready for bed. "I sort of remember a really pretty lady." "Your Mama always was a pretty little thing," replied Queen. "She ain't changed much." Gerald started to ask what Mama's surprise was, but he didn't really want to know. Instead, he just said, "Thanks again for the bike, Aunt Queen. I promise to be real careful." "I know you will, child. Now get some sleep." Queen turned off the light and rolled her chair into the kitchen, where she made herself a cup of tea. She sipped slowly, thinking about the last 6 years, and how the boy sleeping in the next room had enriched her life with his laughter and energy. Yes, times had been rough for the two of them occasionally, and yes, she was getting older, and yes, her arthritis was sometimes painful. But there was no way she was going to let them take Gerald away from her. She glanced at the proud new bike on the porch. She was glad she had given it to him a day early. The bike had been in layaway for months, but the joy on his face had been worth the sacrifice. He would need that moment of happiness to hold on to in the next few weeks, for a struggle was coming from which she could no longer shield him. Aunt Queen gazed at the darkened sky and prayed for strength. 5. Gerald woke the next morning to the sound of voices in the kitchen. He put the pillow over his head, angry that she couldn't even wait until a decent hour to ruin his birthday. Aunt Queen rolled quietly into his room. "Gerald?"
"Tell her to go away," Gerald mumbled from under the pillow.
"I made pancakes with maple syrup this morning for your birthday," coaxed Aunt Queen. "Come on and let's have a nice family breakfast, okay?"
"Why'd she have to come today, Aunt Queen?"
asked Gerald as he peeked from under his pillow. "She has a birthday present for you, and a couple of other surprises as well," replied Aunt Queen with a tightness in her voice that Gerald had never heard before. "Get some clothes on and be a man. You can't stay in here all day. Besides, I need you out there."
"Okay," sighed Gerald. "I'll be out in a minute. But I'm coming 'cause of you, not for her."
5 minutes later, in clean T-shirt and jeans, Gerald walked slowly to the kitchen. The smell of warm maple syrup would forever be blended in his mind with the events of that birthday morning. For a moment, he stood in the doorway of the kitchen, unnoticed. He thought he had forgotten, but he would have known his mother anywhere. She didn't look much different from the last time he saw her, when her high heels had clicked out of his life and left him alone.
She was thin, the color of coffee and cream, with her hair done in fresh finger curls. She wore a red dress. Somehow, he knew that she'd have on red. That was tightened at the waistline with a shiny gold belt. She was laughing. Unwillingly, he remembered how he used to love her laugh. For a long time, it had echoed in his mind like musical memory. And suddenly, the song was loud and bright and painful once more. Standing next to his mother was a tall, chocolate-brown man who was looking out of the kitchen window, paying no attention to the nervous conversation or the rich breakfast smells about him. He had hard, muscled shoulders under a tight white T-shirt and crisp blue jeans. And rather than the big brown work shoes worn by most of the men Gerald knew, this man had on shiny black cowboy boots with pointed toes and fancy stitching on the leather. He took a cigarette from the pack in his shirt pocket and had it halfway to his lips when Aunt Queen spoke. "If you're going to put fire on the end of that death stick you're stuffing in your mouth, you can do it on the porch. There will be no smoking in my house, young man." He turned, opened his mouth as if to speak, but instead merely gave Aunt Queen a hard look as he put the cigarette back. Just then, Gerald's mother, Monique, the man with the cowboy boots, and Aunt Queen all seemed to notice Gerald at the same time. Monique inhaled sharply, put her hand to her mouth, and just stared at Gerald with wonder, fear, and admiration. Cowboy boots had nothing to say, and Aunt Queen decided to let the moment happen by itself.
"Hi,"
whispered a tiny voice from the largest kitchen chair. It was only then that Gerald noticed the little girl. She was sitting cross-legged in the chair, and evidently had been watching him as he observed the scene in the kitchen. Gerald thought she looked like one of those glass dolls that shatter when you drop them. She was the color of pale caramel, with skin thin and waxy, stretched over long, delicate bones. She had on a long-sleeved dress that was too big for her, and, even though it was hot, long black tights. But it was her eyes that made Gerald stare. They seemed to fill her small face. They were a soft hazel color, and they had seen many tears.
"My baby," sighed Monique at last. "Can you come speak to your mama, son?"
"Hey, mama," said Gerald slowly. He didn't know what else to say. So he just stood there, staring at his tennis shoes, wishing that it were yesterday, or even tomorrow. Monique tried to fill in the blank space between them.
"Happy birthday, Gerald," she said, smiling at him. "It's been a long time, but I want you to know that you've always been in my heart. Always."
Gerald nodded uncomfortably. The pale little girl in the kitchen chair giggled. As if glad to have something to do, Monique picked up the child and, looking at Gerald as if for approval, said,
"And this here's Angel, your sister."
"Sister?"
exclaimed Gerald loudly.
"Aunt Queen, what's she talking about? I ain't got no sister. And who is this dude with the cowboy boots?"
Aunt Queen, who had been silent, finally said, "Let's all sit down to breakfast and we'll go over the whole story. Jordan, would you say grace?" Jordan walked his cowboy boots over to the table, sat down, and finally spoke. His voice was rough and gravelly, like he needed to clear his throat. He gave Aunt Queen another of those hard, cold looks, then muttered,
"Let Gerald do it."
Aunt Queen, who realized that they didn't need any more tension that morning, replied with quiet authority,
"Let us pray. Dear Lord, be with this family. We're gonna need you. Bless this food, and please be with Gerald on this special day. Amen."
Monique smiled nervously and admitted to Gerald,
"Well, I guess you've got quite a few questions. Here, have some syrup on those pancakes. I remember how much you like maple syrup."
Gerald just frowned. The pancakes could have been cook's shoes for all he could taste, and the sweet smell of the syrup was making him feel sick. He couldn't understand why Aunt Queen would let him go through this ordeal, especially on his birthday. He glanced across the table at her, and she looked pretty miserable as well. Jordan had a plateful of sausages and pancakes, but he looked angry for some reason. The little girl, Angel, was humming quietly to herself and licking maple syrup from her fingers.
"Gerald," Aunt Queen began gently, "you didn't know it. In fact, nobody did, but your mama was pregnant when she went to jail. The baby, Angel, was born there. I tried to get custody when she was born, but Jordan here says he's her daddy, and he and his mother have been raising her down in Atlanta. This is the first time I've seen her." Queen smiled at the child, but Angel wouldn't look at her. She just kept pouring maple syrup on her fingers.
"We've been back in Cincinnati for almost a year now, Gerald," continued Monique. "Me and Jordan are married. We got jobs, and Angel is in first grade. I didn't want to come and see you until I could, make you proud of me. So I waited till your birthday."
Gerald looked up at her and gave her a half smile. Monique looked encouraged, took a deep breath, and blurted,
"Me and Jordan want you to come and live with us."
Gerald choked, sputtered, and leaped from the table.
"Live with you?" he shouted. "You gotta be kidding!"
Tears filled his eyes, and he ran out of the kitchen door, letting it slam behind him. He grabbed his bike and pedaled furiously away. It was very quiet in the kitchen for a moment. Aunt Queen was furious.
"Why'd you do a fool thing like that?" she roared. "The boy wasn't ready. You've been remembering him every day for the last 6 years, but he's been forgetting you. I thought we agreed that you'd let me mention the subject to him gradually in the next few weeks, after he'd had a chance to visit your place, after he got to know you better and feel comfortable with you. And it was supposed to be his choice."
"I'm sorry," Monique sobbed. "I couldn't help it. I was just so excited about seeing him. Now I've ruined everything. Jordan, what should I do?"
Monique asked plaintively. Jordan looked at her briefly and shrugged.
"Your kid, your call."
He got up suddenly, and Monique moved deftly out of his way, but she wasn't quite swift enough. He brushed roughly against her as he was heading out the door.
"I'm going out for a smoke," he said to no one in particular.
He did not acknowledge Aunt Queen, nor did he thank her for the meal. Aunt Queen sighed.
"Gerald will be gone for a while. I'll talk to him when he gets back.
We gotta take this slow, Monique. That boy ain't going nowhere he don't want to, you understand?" Monique slumped in her seat and nodded. She completely ignored Angel, who had eaten very little and had not said a word throughout the meal. Queen said to the child, "Come over here, honey, and let's wash those sticky hands. How about if I slice an apple for you?" Angel nodded. "So," Aunt Queen asked her gently, "tell me what you think of your brother." Angel smiled softly.
"I think he's scared."
"You're right, little one. I think we're all a little scared," replied Aunt Queen. 6. Monique and Jordan got tired of waiting for Gerald to return and decided to leave and come back later. Monique was worried, and Jordan, sullen and angry-looking, made her nervous and unable to sit still. They left Angel with Aunt Queen and promised to return in a couple of hours. Angel didn't even look up when they left. Aunt Queen could see that the child needed some serious mothering. She picked her up with ease, sat Angel on her lap, and just held her for a few minutes. Angel at first was stiff and almost trembling. Gradually, she relaxed and let herself sink into the warmth of Aunt Queen's hug.
"So, how do you like Cincinnati, little one?" asked Queen softly.
"It's okay,"
whispered Angel. "Do you miss your friends in Atlanta?"
"I didn't have no friends."
"What about your grandma? Don't you miss her?"
"She used to yell a lot. She says she was glad I was leaving. She said I cry too much."
Queen tensed with anger, but didn't want to show Angel.
"It's okay to cry, little one," said Queen, as she held the trembling little body. "Nobody's going to yell at you no more, you hear? Aunt Queen's going to make it all better. You can cry on Aunt Queen any time you feel like it, you hear?" Angel sighed slowly and deeply, then dozed while Aunt Queen rocked her. Gerald walked in then, sweaty and still angry. "They gone?" he asked. "Yes, but they'll be back," replied Queen. "I ain't going!" he yelled at Queen. "You don't have to, Gerald. It was not supposed to happen like it did. She told me that she was